Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. I've been fussing with this talk. I keep fussing with it. I feel like I might still be fussing with it as I give it this morning, so I'm just going to offer that. I want to start with a story about Suzuki Roshi. And this is a story from the book To Shine One Corner of the World, and was told to me by Shohaku Okamura, who's the founder of Sanshin Zen Community in Indiana. And I was taking a class with him this fall. And the story goes something like this. At the San Francisco Zen Center in the early 60s, the Rove verse was only chanted in Japanese. And at that time, no one knew what it meant. So one morning, a brave student asked, "What's the meaning of that chant that we do right after Zanzen or Zazen?" And Suzuki said, "I don't know." At which point, the assistant teacher, who was Dainin Katagiri at the time, started running around the room looking for, in all the drawers, a translation that they could hand the student. And the Roshi gestured for him to stop. He then turned to the student, pointed to his chest, and he said, "It's love." Now, what's interesting is that there's a maybe an afterword to the story in that Shohaku Okamura was in San Francisco Zen Center in the early 2000s, giving a class on robes and the Kesa, and told the same story that I just told you. And after the session, a member of the audience came up to him and said, "Are you sure he said love?" Because in Japanese, love and robe sound very similar. So I don't know if it's robe, I don't know if it's love. It's just after Valentine's Day, so I like the love part. We're going to talk about robes this morning. And maybe what we could do is think that maybe he was saying both of them and hold that for a little while. So I've been interested in this topic of robes for many reasons. We're preparing for Jikai, where we'll be handing out a form of the robe. I did a study intensive, like I just mentioned, with Okamura Roshi, and we were studying Dogen's fascicle on the merits of the Kesa. And in the last year, I did my own sewing of robes. So it got very interesting for me. There's three vestments that we wear here at Dharma Rain. There's the Wagesa, which is what we give practitioners when they take the precepts, which we'll be doing in a few weeks. There's the Roksu, which is sewn by students when they enter into a lay discipleship with the teacher. And there's the Kesa, which I'm wearing this morning. It's a little, we usually dress down a little bit for the Dharma talks, but I thought we're going to talk about robes this morning. So I thought, going to wear my Kesa this morning. And those are also sewn and worn by our transmitted teachers and by the ordained. Now, each of these look different in some particular sense, right? But what I'm hoping to get across today is that they're all the same. They're all forms of the Buddha's robes. And we're going to talk more about what I think are some of those differences and some of the sameness. There's a lot of history about robes. The ascetics before Buddhism even came to being formed wore robes. They had a tradition of making them from discarded scraps of cloth that were sewn together into a larger garment. And they weren't just any discards, they were cloth that no one would think of using. When the Buddha left the palace to pursue a spiritual life, he adopted the same practice. And one sutra says, having removed his ornaments and garments of fine cloth, he donned rags taken from a burial ground, dyed in the color of saffron, the dress of one gone forth. There's actually a list I guess there's 10 discarded rags that one might use to make their kesa out of. Burial rags, as I mentioned, I'll mention a few others. Fire singed rags, menstrual fluid rags, and royal office rags. But what's interesting is when Dogen talks about it, he says the materials are not what matters. He argues, actually, in the fascicle, he argues kind of across time with this Chinese teacher who believes that silk shouldn't be used, for example, because when we make thread from silk, we kill the worms. Dogen's like, silk's fine, plant fiber's fine, all the other rags are fine. But he asks the question, can we sew a robe using materials free from our desires and free from our aversions? When the early Sangha formed, monks adopted the same practice of sewing rags to make robes. And it turns out that kind of sameness actually started to cause some difficulties because you couldn't tell the difference between one wandering monk and another wandering monk. And one of the Buddha's patrons, King Bhimpiyana of Magadha, asked the Buddha for help. He said, could you do something about this? Could we kind of standardize in some way? And the Buddha gave the task to Ananda, saying that let's make these robes look like these rice fields around us. And he said the kesa should be laid out in strips, laid out in lines, laid out in embankments, laid out in squares. And so today, the robes that we wear, in particular the kesa as well as the raksu, have that same pattern, that pattern of rice fields. As the practice in India developed, there were more forms that were created, and monks were actually given a set of three robes when they ordained. And having the three robes gave them, as you'd expect, very practical sort of protection against climate and weather. And they could adjust to what their practice needed in the moment. And as a quick aside, our three robes retreat that's coming up in June kind of works from that perspective. It's this idea that we relax the forms a little bit in that retreat, and we give people an opportunity to explore for themselves what's needed. Do I need one robe? Do I need two robes? Do I need to sit on the Ngawa? And so rather than some of the tighter forms that we use in our other sesshins, we let people explore for themselves what they need. So think about that. It's coming up quicker than you think. Dogen describes these three robes, and he says that each one of them should be sewn with a different number of strips. In Japanese, the word is jo. And so the first robe should be sewn with five jo. And in Japan, this robe is actually called a samoe. So the robe of the kesa that I'm wearing this morning is a samoe. And it draws from that, a lot of people in the room know what a samoe is, at least in, our context. It's usually a work jacket that we wear. Samu actually means mindful work or intentional work. And the A at the end is robe. And so the samoe is meant for daily work, for temple administration, for kind of that coming and going. It was also the robe to wear when monks were by themselves. So if you were practicing by yourself, you wore your five jo kesa. As I just mentioned, this five jo robe, this samoe, is the robe that our temple adopted for lay teachers. And as I've heard it described, it's meant to be symbolic of the role of lay teachers in the everyday world beyond the temple. And the added ring is meant to just further distinguish the robe a little bit. The second robe that you would get when you were ordained was a seven jo robe. And this is the traditional robe that we call the kasaya in Sanskrit, or kesa. As I understand it, the seven jo kesa itself is referred to actually in Japan as an okesa. So it has a little o at the beginning of it. A lot of times when you want to give something a little more honor in Japanese, kind of put an o in front of it. So it adds more respect, more refinement. This robe was meant for the Dharma hall, for chanting, for services, for meditation. And this was the robe to wear when you were with other members of the Sangha. at Dharma Rain. This is the style of robe worn by the monastic members of our Sangha. There's a third robe, and I was actually thinking, we were talking right before the talk, that even noticing how many stripes one of the kesas has is pretty difficult to see. So I had to ask around, is there any nine-jo kesas? Because that's actually the third version. It's actually called Dai-e. It's the great robe. It's the ceremonial robe. Dogen says it's the one you're supposed to wear when you go to the imperial palace. And it's the one that you're supposed to wear when you give Dharma talks. It's also one worn by a teacher when you transmit a student. I don't think we have very many nine-jo robes around, if you start looking. The last piece I want to mention about the kesa is that it's one of those things that can easily be some people wear it, other people don't. And I want to point out that kesas have been worn, and I mean literally in this form, by monastics and lay practitioners all the way back to the beginning. In Japan, there were actually temples where lay people would join monastics on certain days of the month. And it normally matched the quarter phases of the moon. And then there was extra days. There was an extra day before the new moon and an extra day before the full moon. And lay people were given an okesa. They were given a set of orioki bowls. They took a special set of precepts. And they were referred to as practitioners. These practitioners were referred to as a monk of 6 days. I think it's kind of funny, kind of interesting. And when I heard that story, I was struck at really how similar our practice here is to Dharma Rain. That we practice alongside each other, having taken precepts or vows, or maybe still considering if we want to do any of that. And I think about this other story. I think about this story again. It's a story from Suzuki Roshi that he said that when he came to the States, he didn't know what to do with Westerners because we weren't lay people, but we weren't monastics. But you're going to create something is basically what he said. You're going to create your own form here in the West. It reminds me of this monk of 6 days. So maybe this morning as we sit here, maybe we're monks of the Sunday morning, and maybe we have monks of the Wednesday evening, and maybe we have monks of the residential container, and monks who've taken vows, and maybe we sit together as monks on Sesshin. I just really like that there were ancestors who recognized that there were these people that wanted to practice more diligently and that we should do something to recognize them and honor them. The other two vestments that we wear here are the Wagesa and the Raksu, as I mentioned. And again, I hope you'll recognize a certain sameness because they are actually other forms of the Buddha's robes. The Wagesa probably appeared sometime in the 1300s in Japan. It was worn by pilgrims and lay people, kind of solving that earlier problem that I mentioned, that lay people wanted a way to be able to be identified as Buddhists. Many sects have some form of the Wagesa, and it's quite common to see them when you visit temples in Japan. Our lineage that came through a temple called Sojiji was involved in actually a lot of conversion of local temples throughout rural Japan. And we came to adopt the Wagesa. It was already a common vestment, and it's something that we ended up kind of picking up and adopting as well. There are other temples in America that use it, but Gio Kennett, who also trained at Sojiji, brought the tradition of the Wagesa to the United States through our lineage. And as I understand it, she wanted to open up the practice to as many as possible. And when taking the precepts, we give, during Jikai, we give precepts, teas of Wagesa. And I think that wide welcoming that Gio Kennett had of welcoming individuals into the Buddhist practice is something we still hold really strongly here at Dharma Rain. Now, as for the Raksu, as many of you know here at Dharma Rain, individuals sew them when they enter into a teacher relationship. But I would mention that if you run across other people wearing Raksus in other Western lineages, sometimes it's the Raksu that's actually given at precepts. So it doesn't always necessarily mean the same thing depending on what lineage you're in. Raku, the beginning of Raksu, actually means to bind together or to connect. It can mean to wrap around. And that su, that suffix at the end, actually means small. So when you kind of combine those together, you get something like small stitch cloth or small wrapping cloth. I think for us, it means small raksu or small kesa. The raksu is a little harder to nail down when it was actually created. It is definitely, in our form, a very Zen vestment. You don't actually see it in other sects. It probably got created in the 1500s. And it really came into wide use in the 1800s. Priests were expected to do much more things, get out into the communities, and kesas weren't exactly the thing that worked particularly well to go walking around villages talking to parishioners. So the raksu actually became the vestment of choice. And the raksus, and we were again talking right before our talk this morning, that I think all raksus that at least are sown here are sown with that five jo, five stripes. So against that creative work. And the only other thing that I found that I thought was interesting is I think the ring that we use on our raksus is a lineage, something within our lineage. There were two main lines, kind of in the history of Soto Zen. There was one that stayed very close to Dogen's teachings and was based at Heiji, and then the one that our lineage tends to go through is Sojiji, and they tended to loosen some of those stricter requirements. And by using a ring, it was actually much easier to have someone else sew the raksu for you. You didn't have to have it individually tailored, each one. Dogen wrote two fascicles about the kesa. One was about the transmission of the kesa from one ancestor to another, and the other was about the specifics of the kesa, the material up for it, the measurements of it, the sewing, how you should actually sew it, very specific instructions, how it should be worn, how it should be washed. And in that fascicle, in the merits of the kesa, Dogen has a list of merits that he says the kesa has. And I'm just going to give you his list first. He says it's called the robe of liberation. It's called the robe of the field blessing. It's called the robe of no form. It's called the insurpassable robe. It's called the robe of patience. It's called the robe of the Tathagata. It's called the robe of great loving kindness and great compassion. It's called the robe of the victory banner. It's called the robe of the Anuttara Samyak. So I was thinking about that list, and I wonder if maybe you'd have things you might add to that list. Maybe we would share those during the Q&A. Here are a few of mine. I think it's the robe of the grass-roofed hut. I think it's the robe of the earth witness mudra. I think it's the robe of the baby Buddhas. I'm gonna end with a short verse commentary on this particular fascicle of Dogen's. Gyun was Dogen's Dharma grandson, and he wrote verse commentary for quite a few of Dogen's fascicles in the Shobo Genzo. And we've been using these verses kind of as kind of capping verses at the end of our Dogen study that we've been doing for the past few years. And they just seem to land. They seem to really encapsulate. And I felt like this one did too. So this is from Gyun. This is for Kesa Kodoku, the merits of the Kesa. The sacred object transmits our spiritual lineage. Flames cannot destroy it, but mere talking will not create it. What kind of needle stitches together this land with India? ancient seeds on our thriving in an auspicious field.
Now it's time for our Q&A. If you are here in the room, go ahead and raise your hand and I will bring the mic to you. Before you make your question or comment, please say your name and make sure the mic is about an inch from your face so the people on Zoom can hear you. And if you are on Zoom, put your question in the chat and the co-host will either unmute you or read your comment or question.
Hi, Suho. This is Lindsay. I'm just curious if, and I haven't really sewn my own robes in any form here, but I don't know if this is correct, but it seems like we probably use newer fabric, maybe, but I wonder if there's ever been, if you could speak maybe more to if you're able to choose like used fabric or your own fabric, or if there's any intentionality in that.
I went to Michael's.
Which is cool too. Nothing wrong with Michael's.
I don't know if there was intentionality, but well, there was some intentionality. I think I've heard different stories and maybe other people can chime in. I think what's interesting is like, when you have a topic like this, there's lots of people who've had lots of different experiences with theirs. I know some have used fabric that's been given. I know some people who have bought fabric. I think there's lots of different pieces to that. And I think anyone who's done that sewing usually has some story about stuff and where it came from and how it came to be.
So. Thank you.
There's a question on Zoom from Geoshin. What was it like for you to receive your kesa? What is your relationship to it now?
It still feels very new, Geoshin. What did it feel like? Today, I would say it felt like something that was always there. That would probably be my answer.
Hi, I'm Ginkgo. I'm the sewing teacher. I will say that I have a lot of black scrap fabric for roxus. Because when people make robes or roxus or whatever, there's often some left over and they ask whether I can use it. And I say, sure. So that is an option. Any color you pick, black is included, has lots of different shades. Mm-hmm. So, you know, generally for the way we make roxus, we want them to be sort of uniform color. That hasn't always happened that way. Same with anything we're making, robes or anything like that. So there's that. And also just to mention that, yeah, you get help if you want to, which most people do. It is a fairly challenging thing to sew. There's lots of different kinds of stitching that happens with it. And the process of making it is in itself a meditation. And it becomes your own. And to the point where you can say exactly what you just said. It's always been mine. So yeah.
Hi, this is Colleen. I was gonna offer my definition. For me, the kesa is the emptiness of emptiness.
I don't know if this relates, but the altar fabric is what I did because I had an altar at home. So I would go out to some fabric store, get different fabric, whether it was matched the weather or the season, whether it was gray, green, yellow, and then cut out like a square or shape and then sew it, hand sew it, stitch it, I guess, and then put it on the altar and then like just have to keep it clean. So yeah, that was fine.
I think it totally applies. Yeah. I think the fabric we use it's awfully nice on our altars. And in other traditions, the kesas and the roxus can get very elaborate, particularly when you see the ones in Japan. They have very fancy, kind of very fancy fabrics. In our tradition, we've tended to keep it pretty quiet and solid colors to kind of support our practice. Yeah, thank you.
Hi, Suho, it's Sonia. The last Joshin's question and Genko's comment both speak to this a little bit, but I've been thinking about devotional practice a lot lately. So to me, those are things that we do with our bodies or maybe our chanting. And I think it doesn't get much more kind of devotional than donning the symbol of a robe. And I wondered if you could speak to that a little bit for you.
Yeah, I was thinking, I think to sew my raksu when I became a lay disciple, I think it was every night for 2.5 months. And I was, I kind of was late. Okay, so I'm bad at it. I don't know what he's like, yeah, you're really bad at it. Okay. I also remember I was running towards a date that had already been set. So I was like, you need to be done by this day. And I remember on the day finding out I'd sewn something wrong, and on that day needing to take apart and put back together. My kesa took even longer. Yeah, it took months. And honestly, I picked it up and put it down. I love that you called it out as devotional practice, because I think the practice of sewing that kesa in whatever form, it gives you time to consider, the time to kind of process what it is that you're about to enter into, because there's a change. Like these vestments do also mark a change in your practice. I found both of them very valuable. Yeah.
You mentioned kind of the, like, there's a mental process of change, but there's also like the irrational sort of physical embodiment of putting on your vestment. So I think that there's this like...
Yeah, like I think, I remember the first time someone said, just think about the fact that we make the choice every morning to put it back on when we chant the rosary verse. Like that's another form of devotional practice. And I think that matters. I think that, yeah.
My name is Sarasade. I was wondering why you were struggling. You said that you were finicking with the message. I was wondering why.
Fussing, yeah. Fussing. Why was I fussing with it? Because this one felt important to me, I think. Giving this talk felt important. Like Joshin sort of asked, hey, what's it like? What's it like today in that kesa? I think it's still me getting comfortable in this kesa. Yeah.
Hello, this is Dayo. I think that, I mean, I don't really have a concise definition, but probably something along the lines of the robe of directionless generosity. Mm-hmm. I think of how my raksu, the fabric was given to me by Genko. My best friend made the ring for me, and like Genko helped me sew it. There's like the tradition, our ancestors passing it along. There's also like the generosity of like this other culture, like us in this culture borrowing from another culture, and that being like a gift. And the, like, when I wear it, I want to represent that generosity or embody that generosity and carry it forward. Yeah, and it's really like easy to feel, I guess, is my point. It's like I can't look at this and not feel overwhelmed with gratitude at all of the aspects of it.
For Kesa Kodoku actually shows up pretty early in the Shobogenzo. So mm-hmm. we did a session on it in the Dogen study class, and everyone brought some version of the Kesa with them. And the discussion that was night was tell your story like you just did. And it was probably the most touching of any of the classes we've done thus far. Students bringing their teachers kesas.
Uh-huh.
It,
That's cute.
It was cute and touching and wonderful. Like, I think everybody has that story, like you just described, Io, about their kiss. Yeah.
Thank you for your talk. This is Nancy. My comment dovetails what Dia was just saying. In the tradition here, and I don't know if it's just here or if it's all part of the story you're telling, we are allowed to give our vestments away. And that's part of, if you're a member here and at the time of your death, you can pass on these things. And that just, I feel that it's just such a beautiful thing that we could do here. And I wondered if you could tell us, where did that come from? And why do we do that here? Was that something that Yokoko and Kyogen introduced to Dharma Rain?
I don't know if I know that story.
Probably, because typically raksus are written on the back, and so they wouldn't be transferable. So my guess is that that's
I just remember one of our members passed away recently, Sherman, and when we did his memorial here, we had a table that his family brought some of his possessions, and it was like, who wants Sherman's Wagesa up for grabs? And I wonder also if you might know, if somebody does take someone's, you know, thing that got passed along, is there some sort of obligation? How are we supposed to wear that or say something? Or
I don't know if there's something like that. I know that in that session that I was just talking about, different people were talking about wearing their teachers' kesas on sashin, like to sort of honor that lineage and honor that, that passing on.
I remember Genko told me she has Kyogen's kesa.
Yeah.
Thank you.
This just now came to me out of the blue. When my partner Kevin died, he was cremated wearing his rakusu.
More commentary from Genko. There's always more.
It's Genko again. So two things. One is that generally when people die, if they've been disciples, we also make white raksus so that that's what they wear to be cremated with generally. So, you know, we make a white kimono and a white kesa for those folks. But the other thing I wanted to say that occurred to me when people started talking about their kesas. So when I was sewing my kesa, it was summertime, and I was up in a room in the old Sangha house in a neighborhood there in Portland Southeast. And one of the things that would happen is that the ice cream truck would come by. So summer breezes and the little ditties of the ice cream truck are part of my kesa. So yes, we also do, there is a practice where you're, for each stitch, you're supposed to say namu, you know, I can't remember now. But anyway, it's the homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. And I did variations of that for some of it. And that's in there. But I always have a special thing, place in my heart for the ice cream truck. Because it was just a part of the whole deal. So yeah, I think they become very individual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two more.
This is Christina. I just want to appreciate you for this talk and also the way that you talked about lay practice and you yourself wearing like the kesa of a lay person, which I didn't know was a little different or like this some way. So that's cool to know. And the story that you shared about the monk of 6 days, that's going to stay with me. And I think it's a good story for me of like putting on and taking off, right? And right now I'm experimenting with taking off. Like I'm not wearing my raksu and anyway, just thank you. That's all.
This is Caleb. Could you remind me again what the raku part of rakusu means?
Yeah, it means interwoven or wrapping. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think about the Kesaverse has that line of wrapping ourselves.
Then the capping verse you mentioned too from Giyun was there's a line something about how is our practice stitched to
India?
And I'm wondering if there's something here like beneath the surface about the ties that bind us together. There's like the rich language in fiber crafts of like the ties that bind and the ways we are all interwoven. And I'm wondering if you could speak at all to that.
I think you spoke to it quite well. I thought maybe we'd end just saying the robe birth. No, let's just say it. Yeah. How great the robe of liberation, our formless field of benefaction, wrapping ourselves in Buddhist teaching, may free all living beings. Thank you.